Welcome to the Outdoor Panel Podcast, where we talk about chasing critters, catching fish, of course, hunting and fishing stories, and a lot of BSing.
It's like a beast. Oh my God.
Are you kidding me?
Oh, that's a nice eye.
Yeah. That was a fast one. Holy cow.
Welcome to this week's episode of the Outdoor Panel Podcast. In this week's episode, Bud and Eric, meaning Eric myself, are going to discuss what happened in the month of October. We're going to start off, you know, discussing what we were seeing in early October, moving towards the middle and latter part of October. Eric, meaning myself again, had several good encounters in middle and end of October. So we're going to discuss on what happened during those encounters, and that's about it. Let's get into the podcast.
Early October.
Shit. I got to pull up the calendar for this one.
This is when shit gets real.
Does it?
This is when you actually really start getting into stuff down by you.
Yeah, I started hunting southwestern Wisconsin. Let's see here. I think I was on call for work early October. And we went through... Honestly, I didn't get on... I was starting to get on sign. Okay.
Early October. I got to figure it out.
Yeah. Early October, I didn't see too much. Saw a good sign. Didn't see anything I was looking for, though.
I never made it out, so...
There were
some deer behind my work.
Yeah, so...
You know, they come over at noon every day, because they're my pets.
Yeah, early October, I was finding an okay sign to set up on, but... Things didn't start heating up for me until, like, mid-October.
Well, I guess let's go there.
Well, let's just skip to mid-October.
Our October lull is the first week of October.
No, our October lull is November. Just kidding. I think it early October was tough for me because being on call weekend, I just got out of the rhythm of things. Like, that's one thing I do notice. Like, it usually takes like a day and a half to get back in the rhythm, but like me having a week off due to work, and it just gets weird when you have to take some time off. So that'd be a tough, you know, when you're out of the game for a little bit, you personally, that makes sense why it takes a little bit to get back on the wagon, you know. So I guess as we go into mid-October, I was finding really good time. I think mid-October, I messed up a little bit. I think I was not letting the common sense hunt this. I wasn't hunting it because I was finding scrapes. And I remember this one spot. It was right next to bedding. Scrape was opened up. But it wasn't like a huge scrape. It was just like an average scrape. But I think mid-October...
So it was like a 55 Chev hubcap scrape?
Yeah, yeah.
Instead of a car hood,
yeah,
just a hubcap?
Yeah, and I think, me personally, I always look for those car hood scrapes. However, I think, you know, based off my experience scouting that property previously and the rubs that were in there, instead of pushing... I think I should have backed off and hunted the first couple scrapes that I saw, because these scrapes, the licking branch was green as all get out, like fresh, or it was fresh that day, all pawed up, ground was pawed up, but I was like, this scrape isn't really that big, these rubs aren't like super fresh. However, I think that time of year, do the rubs need to be super fresh, or is it good enough that they're just in the location and you just got to go out based off the scrape? And I wish I would have sat that first scrape, because the further I went into that property, the worse the sign got. And it's one of those questions is, you know, a lot of guys say, if you keep on walking, you keep on pushing in, you shouldn't go back, because they're going to smell you on that scent trail that you left out. However, I would counter that in that situation due to that scrape being on a two-track. I think the deer would have been more, if I would have gone back to that first scrape, I think they would have been more acceptable to my scent being on the two-track, because it's where, it's an MFL property.
But at the same time, it's just, being on a two-track, you hear so many guys talk about field edge scrapes, mm-hmm. rubs on the road, rubs in the parking lot, rub lines. Mm-hmm. That's all nighttime activity. Mm-hmm. So it's like, you see a scrape on a two-track, it's like, yeah, fine. He made this scrape at 1:30 in the morning.
Yeah.
So why wouldn't you dive in farther?
Find the
first scrape that he made.
However, this two-track was only, I scouted this bedding area before, was only 50, 75 yards from the first bedding pocket.
Well, okay, then kick yourself in the ass for
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I think I was just looking for something that's extremely good. However, I think in mid-October,
I mean, what were you looking? I mean, I guess looking back at it, trying to figure out.
I was looking
in your mind. What were you looking for? Were you looking for a tree rub that was still pissing sap? Were you looking for a scrape that still had pee in it? I mean,
and I think I've had so many successful hunts that have gone like that, where it's just the ridge side's torn up, rubs everywhere, fresh sign everywhere. Sap coming out of the tree, piss in a scrape. I've had a lot of successful hunts like that, but I think I have the expectation in order to kill every time I have to hunt sign like that. However, I think there's times where the moderately hot sign I should hunt before I dive further, and that way the next day.
Especially if you're already planning to hunt the next day.
Yeah, yeah.
If this is like a Sunday night and you have to work Monday, maybe it's different then versus if it's a Friday night and you have Saturday and Sunday hunt after it.
Yep, and that's the mistake I made. I wish I would have hunted that first scrape next to that first bedding area. And I think a little bit of it, I think I was just overthinking it too much, because it was just like a green alfalfa field on top. I was like, are they going to that right now? They probably were going to that, to be quite honest. I think I just overthunk this hunt. I was thinking, find the hottest sign. I think even like a hubcap size scrape is probably good mid-October, because they're not like super aggressive yet, or they're like...
They're just starting.
They're literally just starting.
I mean, that hubcap size scrape...
Mm-hmm.
He could have did that in one time.
Yep, and there was like two of them, like a line of them going to that field.
That was his first time. But now you give him a week, boom, now it's car hunt.
Yep, and I think I really made a mistake on that hunt. That's one hunt that I regret from this year, was not setting up on that scrape, because it set up perfect for that wind. It was going to the green field. The licking branch was, it was made either the day before or even that same day, maybe in the morning, I don't know. But I decided to keep on pushing in, because that's what I do. Sometimes I think I get a little too aggressive. I think I go for the home run right away rather than the base hit. Sometimes you need some base hits in order to get the home run.
Or to get a run. If you're down by two... A base run, you know, is pretty good.
Because
then you get a home run after that. And
Yeah. So I probably should have stacked my hunts there in order to get the home run. So I kept on going and found another solid scrape. However, this scrape, it was somewhat recent, but it wasn't as fresh as the other two scrapes. And I decided to hunt that scrape because that was the best bedding area I knew about. However, the sign wasn't the best there yet because I don't think they were being pushed yet because they didn't have all the pressure yet going in there. However, the hunt was not a bust. I ended up seeing one doe on that hunt. And I was going to set up on that scrape, but the shooting was terrible. So I had to set up a little bit further bit down the ridge, and the doe ended up getting 20 yards. So she was at 50 yards, 20 yards out of range. So I don't know. That was the first time I was like, I should have sat the first scrape and stacked that second hunt for the next day. So that was just a learning lesson hunt. I screwed up.
But you got to have them. It doesn't matter how long you hunt.
Yeah.
Especially hunting as aggressive that we do.
Yeah.
You're going to have those hunts where it's like, and so many guys say, like, walking in. Like, when you walk in, make sure you can shoot to where you stepped.
And I think I'm, personally, I'm almost too aggressive to a fault. I almost am sometimes too mobile to a fault. I just like to find, that gold mine. That's why I hunt. Finding that gold mine where it's like, holy crap, there's something big in here right now.
Hey, and little Easter egg, this podcast, you'll find out about this maybe the next podcast.
yeah. But, yeah, I'm way too aggressive. Are you, like, I don't know. Do you think I'm too aggressive? A little side tangent. Do you think I, like, just move too much sometimes?
And it's like, I would love for you to come up here.
Yeah.
And have, and literally, like, sit on your shoulder and hunt, like, up here. Because it's like, I hunt up here and it's like, I struggle just to find sign.
Yeah.
You know, compared to, like, when I come down by you.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, yeah, deer trail, scrape, scrub, rub, yeah, scrape, rub. And I'm like, what? Okay, but it's like, I run along with you because it's like, well, me and Eric, you've done it for the last 10 years.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, I trust you to know how deep to dive. Whether or not we deep do too deep, but at the same time, I mean, I've come down to you how many times and it's...
We've been...
Yeah, you'll be like, yeah, go sit in that tree, you'll be fine. You know, sit in that tree. Well, yeah, like... Big old fucking booner comes through, or this big old messed up buck, or whatever. It's like,
yeah
you know what you're doing.
Yeah. No.
There might be a time where we dive in too deep and that buck backdoors you and runs out honestly, the backside, but whatever.
Diving in too deep has been a positive and a negative.
Exactly.
And I think the positives have outweighed the negative. And that's a whole nother podcast.
I mean, I think there's... The only time you dive in too deep is if you're too noisy in your setup or something like that.
Yeah.
You know? Or there's a big old tree in between you or the buck walks through, I think.
Yeah. And
but this whole story, you walked past the fresher sign and you set up on the older sign.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly what happened.
So I think you got burnt. You did get burnt on that hunt.
Yeah.
Finally. You finally got burnt to where you walked past the fresher sign and then the sign petered out on you.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened. And maybe I should have gone back to that scrape.
And then they
might have accepted my sign, though, because the landowner is out there regularly. Yep. I mean, I did talk to an old-timer. He was an old Navy veteran, and I was like, we just had a brief conversation of, you know, what he was seeing, what I was seeing, and I believe that landowner is out there regularly, so I think they would have accepted my sign on that two trek. So
you never know. You never know.
But
You never know because it's over with now.
Yep.
You kind of got to learn something from it, but at the same time, You got to throw it away.
Yep. And that was the first time I've scouted that property, but that was the first time I've ever hunted that property. So, and I think that's a whole nother podcast too, is Bud and I property jump a lot.
Yeah.
A lot. To where sometimes it's a good thing, but sometimes it's a huge detriment because it kind of handicaps us from learning a property.
But how many times can you sit the same property and not see anything?
Exactly. Exactly.
You sit a property, you don't see anything. Okay, fine. I'll go sit this part of the property. Mm-hmm. You don't see anything. Well, screw it. I'm going to go find something else.
Yeah, that's exactly know? Right. That's exactly.
But guess what? If I sat it on a Saturday and a Friday, but Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, that property would have been stacked. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know?
Yep. Yeah, so we moved on to Ruckation, my Ruckation, your kind of Ruckation. And I guess that's when the action really started picking up overall. My first day of the Ruckation, I remember the day, it was October 21st. And this was a river bottom chunk that I scouted. I planned on having my dad come down this year and hunting. And it was kind of, even though we were in hill country, I was trying to focus on flatter ground that my dad could handle. So I was like, this river bottom chunk looks really good. And I scouted this postseason, and it ended up being a really nice chunk of land. And October 21st, I snuck into this little river bottom property. And basically, it was a cut bean field. Next to some cornfield, and both these fields pinched everything down along this creek bottom, and they cut both those fields like in that same week, and I went out there shining actually, and saw a lot of deer, a lot of does down there, so I was like, man, this time of year, if there's does down here, there's probably gonna be some bucks cruising along this creek bottom, so. I ended up sitting there, and man, I think it was like 30 minutes into my pre-ruckation. I'm looking straight forward. I'm watching this creek bottom because that's where everything's going to cruise, you know? And I'm just sitting there, and I do one of these, the soybean field, cut soybean field. It was over my left-hand shoulder. I just do a quick little look out of the corner of my eye, and there's 135 inch buck looking at me, standing in this open bean field.
Where he's not supposed to be.
Where he's not supposed to be. Downwind of me. So, he looks at me, I look at him. The jig's up. He takes off like a bat out of hell. I was like, son of a gun. That didn't work out right. But, I mean, I was feeling pretty good. I was like, I had an encounter. We're gonna sit here a while.
You were in the spot.
I was in the spot. I was in the spot, and ended up sitting till like 10 o'clock that morning. Didn't see anything else, but I was just shocked that buck was just standing right out in the middle of that bean field. I guess part of the story. I got down, started heading towards my access point. And I learned as I was heading back to the vehicle that one of the spots that I walked through in the spring and scouted, I didn't realize was a big old doe bedding area. And that's where that buck was. I was like, that's why he was over there. And postseason scouting, I couldn't see those doe beds at all in there.
Yeah.
And I walked through that in the morning, and they weren't in there when I was accessed the stand. However, there's like three or four of them as I got out. I was like, that's what he was checking out. He was keeping tabs on those does in there. So that was exciting. Then the pre-rut continued to proceed. I think I've still getting on good deer action. I think I had a couple more encounters with shooters. I just don't remember any of those hunts very detailed. I guess I was just looking forward to bug coming down.
Because the very first property you talked me to, well, outside of the very first night, but you had the first property where, like, you had an encounter with a guy or the shooter on one side of the ridge.
Yep.
Then the wind switched. So then you had to switch to the other side of the ridge, mm-hmm. which was super thick. Mm-hmm. That's where you had, like, your ground attack. Mm-hmm. And then there was, like, another night. The night, that was the night that I came down.
Oh, yeah.
And then you were like, well, I had 30 deer tonight. And
oh, that's
you,
right.
You sent me down to some river bottom. And
no.
I got attacked by a dog, and some duck hunter came through, and, you know, we shook hands in his canoe and stuff like that.
Yeah. No, Bud struck up my memory there of what happened next. So my next really good encounter was on the 24th of September. So this was another property I scouted in the preseason, and it set up tremendous for pre-rut activity. Just a big saddle that just funneled everything through it, and it was thick on the one side. It wasn't so thick on the other side. And the problem with the side I was hunting is that there's these maple trees, but these maple trees had so much for limb growth on them. I've never seen anything like it. I've never seen maple trees grow like this, but it was like limbs just everywhere. I tried getting in with my stand, and I could get up about 6 feet, but just the shooting angles to the trails were horrible. Like, it would have been like straight on shots, like meaning shooting the deer like through the chest, like, and it was still kind of quartering, so I didn't like that. So I ended up getting down from my stand to have a little bit better shooting angle, and I was like, I gotta make some sort of makeshift ground blind just so the deer don't see me. So that's what I did. Ended up putting my stand about 1 inch off the ground. However, I think that's smart.
You need a chair.
Yeah, I needed a chair in that situation, and I needed something to get me up off the ground a little bit so I could shoot over the brush. So I think a lot of factors went into that encounter after I moved, and why that buck came in. And this is probably about 130-inch deer, maybe 120-inch shooter in my book.
Especially on the public ground. Land.
Yeah.
Public land, on the ground.
Yeah. So I made a ground blind, put my stand in, and no longer than 5 minutes later, I don't even have my arrow knocked yet. I see horns. I'm like, oh man, I am not ready, but we're going to get ready real quick.
Heard you scraping the tree with the stand.
No, I think he got curious because there's a bedding area less than 75 yards away. And it's time of night when things start calming down. And me crashing around, throwing dead logs all over the place. I guarantee you he was curious, and that's why he came over to that scrape to show his dominance. And so I got this arrow knocked, and after I got the arrow knocked, I made sure the GoPro was on, and me and him locked eyes pretty quick in that encounter.
Well, yeah, your eye level.
Yeah, I was below his eye level, and I've never shook more on a deer before. Absolutely, I got the shaky legs or whatever you call it. It was about probably 15 to 20 seconds worth of just shaky legs, and I just was like, Eric, pull your shit together right now, let's go. So I just had a little conversation with myself. I was able to calm that down. It's amazing like how that works out though, like how sometimes you lose it uncontrollably. Like, yeah. It's crazy how you have to have, like, conversations with yourself. And he ended up, after I was still, he ended up moseying on over to the scrape, ended up working that scrape. That was just so cool seeing him, like, a decent buck, like a real good buck, working a scrape like that before.
But you didn't shoot him.
I did not shoot him because I had brushed my left right in front of the scrape. It was like, what a terrible spot for a scrape, but it's a little thicker in there. And he started moseying off to the right. I'm like, I'm going to have an opportunity. So he just did like a 360. He came at me frontal, turned around to the scrape, was facing away from me, then turned back around. And when he turned back around, he was broadside to me, finally. And he was taking step. I was like, man, I need two more steps, and this arrow's flying. And he does one of those numbers where he kind of turns his head to the left, but not really. And I sit up a little bit, getting ready to draw. Turned his head right at me. I was like, son of a gun. So I was like, we'll just play cool.
Is he looking at you, or is he looking at the grasshopper next to you?
Yeah, probably the camera. Probably saw a little reflection off of it, maybe. That's the thing about the cameras. I wonder how much they see like off of reflections and whatnot. So, well, he turns his attention off me. He puts his head down, but then turns his head back again, like, because he knew what was up. I was like, man, I just need him to take two more steps. I was like, even if he's looking at me and takes two more steps, I'm drawn, because that's my only chance. Like, and the opportunity never came. He never took the two steps that I needed. However, after he departed from that location and blew out the entire neighborhood, I started looking at my setup a little bit more, and I think what I wish I would have done different in that scenario is I wish I would have looked at angles a little bit differently. I think if I would have got half my butt cheek, meaning just one butt cheek on the stand, one butt cheek off the stand.
Just for the record, Eric just shifted his butt in his chair. Because he wanted a visual experience, but nobody can see that in the podcast.
Yeah. So, still shifting. If I would have shifted and had half a butt cheek on and created a little bit better angle, I think I would have got a shot at him. I think just
possibly.
I think I would have, because I did it after he went through. I was like, son of a...
But could you have drawn?
Oh, it would have been tough, because it would have been a slide, move, pull. It would have been tough. It's tougher when you're on the ground. However, there was some takeaways from that hunt
That's my main question. Like, outside of like looking at your shot, did you learn anything?
Oh, yeah. I learned a lot out of that hunt. That was an armed property I've never hunted before. I found a more suitable tree to be set up to shoot to the scrape and the trails. I think I get the mindset set of always having to be at least up at least two sticks, up at least 10 feet or so. However, the way this set up, the best setup was being up one stick or a stick and a half. And
stick and an eighter.
Yeah, stick and an eighter basically. And using the saddle platform, because I tried using the tree stand in there, and it, just the way everything lined up, it didn't work. Where with the saddle, I was able to put the platform at a good height, and your lean off the saddle, there is actually a tree branch that lines up with my body perfectly in that tree stand, and I actually utilized this in future hunts and was not busted once. And I learned, too, that I cannot hunt that side during the day. The thermals have to be dropping either in the morning or at night, like, unless it's a really strong north wind. That's the only way I could get away with that.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so just to test the theory out, if I could get away with deer walking by at 10 yards or less in this little setup, sticking an eighter off the ground. I went in there the next day, sat up in that tree stand location, and I had deer all around me, and they didn't bust me once. And then I was level with them, but my body lined up perfectly with that stick. or with the branch coming out of the tree.
Yeah. So you're not silhouetted. You're nope. Perfectly camouflaged.
Thick tree, perfect setup, wind blowing down the hill. I saw a lot of deer that night too, so learned something.
Oh, yeah. I heard about all your deer that you saw that night.
Yep.
You're like, oh, I'm going to take you to a spot tomorrow morning.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I had a real good sit that night, so I was like, bud, we're going to go back to this super, super funnel.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's where Bud and I went,
and
we did some more learning.
Yeah, we saw a fork before daylight, and we saw a fawn.
No, it was a year and a half old.
Whatever. At gray light.
Yeah, at gray light, so...
And a lot of squirrels.
However, the previous day, though, I saw two does and a nice 8-pointer at 7:30. So, I don't know.
What did we see at 7:30?
No, the previous day before you were down there, I saw a nice.
Yeah, but what did we see the day when I went down there?
Squirrels.
Squirrel. Well, we saw a coyote. We saw two coyotes.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening to this week's podcast. Hopefully you guys enjoyed the listen. In next week's episode, Bud and myself, meaning Eric again, are going to discuss what happened on Bud's pre-ruckation/ruckation when he headed down to southwestern Wisconsin and joined up with me in the hills. It is another fun listen, so looking forward to having you guys listen next week. Thanks.